Many of the big LGBT victories we've achieved over the years have come down to getting the judicial courts to change their perception of gender roles. For example, the Federal Appeals Court recently said that workers can't be fired for being gay, since the Civil Rights Act of 1964 already prohibits discrimination against an employee based on gender stereotyping. And now, in Oregon, a judge decreed that the DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, must issue driver's licenses for non-binary people and mark them with an X for unspecified, or as we call it, exceptional.
This is a momentous occasion that's been a long time coming, as people who don't identify as either male or female will finally gain the freedom and recognition they deserve. Today, we are chatting with Lake Paraguay, Esquire, the attorney who brought the case before the court on behalf of his client, Sergeant First Class Jamie Shoup, who identifies as non-binary. Listen as we chat with Lake about why his client was motivated to take this to court.
Why large LGBT rights organizations shied away from the case.
And how this case is getting us to rethink our tired, worn-out notions of gender.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
Oregon is about to become the first state in the nation to allow folks to mark X on their driver's license, representing not specified as their gender. As you can imagine, this is about to open up an exciting new front in the ongoing battle for equality. Joining us today is Lake Paraguay, the lawyer representing Sergeant First Class Jamie Shoup, the person who successfully petitioned the state of Oregon for legal recognition as a non-binary person. Effective July 1st, everyone in Oregon can now get X on their driver's license or ID cards. Congratulations, Lake Paraguay.
Thank you, Fausto. Thank you, Mark. It's so wonderful to be with you both.
It is good to see you.
Yeah, it's been a while.
This is a big win for you as a civil rights lawyer. It's a big win for gender non-binary people and LGBT people in Oregon.
I think nationwide. I mean, this case, we started this case in June of last year. Mm-hmm. Jamie Shoup successfully convinced the judge to provide a legal status for Jamie as a non-binary person. That was the first time in the United States that that has happened. I mean, there were non-binary people in Native American times, and they had recognition, but under the laws...
Yeah, like Coco Peru is a two-spirit.
Right.
Verdashi, yeah.
Yeah, Verdashi, which is considered a pejorative term these days.
Oh, but it is?
A bit. Okay. It's a French word that was used to describe Native Americans in America.
Okay.
Without a lot
that.
Of understanding.
Coco Peru, shame on you.
She's so racist.
But what
so
a terrible much... person, Coco Peru.
So that happened in last June. Yeah. And that was the first in the nation under American laws. And then we asked the Department of Motor Vehicles of the state of Oregon to modify their systems and change their rules to include a new category for non-binary people. And since it was the first time that the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, had been presented with the legal status of a person that was other than M or F, they recognized their obligation to serve all Oregonians and immediately set to work to create new systems so that they could recognize non-binary people in Oregon. And what they did was take it one step further, and they changed the policies to make it even easier for trans people who are going from M to F or F to M mm-hmm. to simply present and attest what their gender is. No longer do you need a court order or a doctor's note. Anyone can just go in and just like you tell them your height and your weight and they don't measure you, you can now tell them your gender and they'll just fill in the box and you get your license.
And you, for the first time in history, have made Americans excited to go to the DMV.
That is true, yes. There's a new option at the DMV, which is very exciting, and more people are included. I mean, people who go to the DMV who are trans, sometimes they're forced to lie simply so that they can drive. A non-binary person, if there's only an M or an F and they don't identify with M or F, then they're forced to lie or they don't get a license.
Well, and it's your driver's license is much more than just a license to drive. It's, you know, it's your banking account. It's checking into a hotel. It's everything. It's getting a passport.
It is your identity in terms of the way you interact with the government and sometimes private individuals who want to check to make sure that is who you are.
As every teenager in this country will attest, a driver's license is a license to thrill.
Right. And it's a rite of passage, too. Mm-hmm. So a lot of young trans kids now who may not present according to their gender at birth, they can go in with their birth certificate that identifies them in terms of date of birth and name, and then they can tell the person at the DMV what their gender is. They need not change the birth certificate. They need not have a court order. They need not have a doctor's letter.
Well, what about something from their parents, let's say, if they're 16?
They don't need anything from their parents. The administrators at the Department of Motor Vehicles will accept an applicant's attestation, what they say their gender is, and that's the end of it. That is that is not happening anywhere else in this country.
That's amazing.
And so I can imagine that somebody now who gets an X on their driver's license in Oregon and moves to, let's say, Alabama,
Or North Carolina.
This is going to start causing some friction.
Well, when friction happens, there's heat, and heat makes change. So let's bring it on.
Yeah. Pass the lube around, honey.
That's right.
Wow, that is such a big deal, though, because I was listening to you. You were on public radio earlier today talking about this. That this also is just a ramification for gender equality of all people. It allows also women who feel like they've been discriminated to just say, my gender is none of your business, and to put X as well.
Well, right. Under Oregon law, I'm looking at it right now. It's an Oregon administrative rule that they took a year to build and invited stakeholders throughout the state, all of the agencies, the Department of Corrections, the police, the Vital Statistics Office, the Attorney General, the governor's office, all these people came together multiple times. Not one agency or one person said anything against it or thought it would be problematic in any way in the state. Mm. So there was no objection by the administrators. And then no one actually spoke at the two public hearings against it from the public. There were 12 people that wrote in comments that said, I think this is crazy and the world's going to hell. But otherwise...
But they were lazy and they didn't show up.
No one showed up.
Not a single person.
But we've seen in other kind of places where people show up and people testify, especially like some of these bathroom bills like in Texas and other places. Why do you think in Oregon people just didn't show? Why, they were not interested in it? Or did it kind of fly under the radar? Because from the time you started this case until it was done, it was a very short period, right?
It was a short period of time. It was in the news. Mm-hmm. There were public comments about it. Not many, though. Mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of other things going on. I think people are rather focused on their entrenched ideas related to the presidency and whether you're Republican or Democrat. I mean, Oregon is primarily a Democratic state. We're a matriarchy. We're run by a bisexual governor. We have a Jewish woman who is the attorney general who supported the marriage equality case a couple of years ago.
It's a very progressive
majority leader in the legislature is a woman. The Speaker of the House is a woman. So it's a matriarchy, and it's a lot of people who have been in Oregon for a long time who fought back a lot of anti-gay ballot measures. And Oregon is probably the state that has had the most anti-gay ballot measures in the country, and that was about 20 years ago. So we consolidated around certain ideas, and we rejected certain ideas that were against equality and against inclusivity. So Oregon's a very inclusive state. I don't know why many people didn't. I just don't think it's that controversial in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Maybe it will be in other states.
Because it's going to happen in other states, right?
Well, it's already happening now. We learned this week.
It's snowballing.
A bill has been submitted in the state of Texas in the legislature to recognize non-binary. There's one pending in California. And also this week, one was submitted in the District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. And this all happened after Jamie got there. Recognition. Also, Asia Kate Dillon is the first person to be in a character on a TV show that came out as non-binary. Her, their character.
What TV show is that?
It's Billions, and the character's name is Taylor. And the first words out of Taylor's mouth are, "I'm Taylor, and my pronouns are they, them, and theirs." And so, a wide audience was introduced to the concept of non-binary. That actor, Asia Kate Dillon, is also non-binary. And the MTV Awards, I think, or I'm not sure, one of the award shows for the first time is getting rid of gender categories when it comes to actors because of Asia Kate Dillon.
So now that we have X on the driver's license, are we going to have to build like a third toilet for people? So it's men, women, and then an X?
I don't know that you need to build
a
well, I mean, and you know,
do we need to?
But these are practical questions that a lot of people, I mean, it may be a joke for you, but I mean, these are the first questions that a lot of people are going to be curious about.
Especially right wingers.
Well, and not just right wingers. I mean, you look at anti-discrimination laws and you can't discriminate or favor one sex over another. And that goes, that's true for private businesses that are places of public accommodations, including restrooms, I mean, including restaurants and hotels. And most restaurants now just have a male and a female bathroom. So what do you do when there's now a new gender? Well, we saw that the Department of Motor Vehicles didn't just say, use the M or use the F. They created a new category. So are places of public accommodation going to be forced to create a third bathroom, or are all bathrooms just going to become gender neutral? And in Portland, that's what's happening in the government buildings, is that they're not segregating bathrooms anymore.
At all.
It's an Ally McBeal bathroom.
They're moving in that direction.
So like the TV show Ally McBeal, which had a lot of, it created a lot of opportunities for drama when you had men and women sharing the sinks to wash their hands and everybody peed and pooped in their own stalls.
And maybe men will get less messy in the bathroom. I don't know.
Women are actually much messier than men in the bathroom.
And look at us being sexist about who's messy in the bathroom.
I'm telling you, I worked in the restaurant business for years. You go into a men's bathroom and then you go into a women's bathroom. There's just toilet paper everywhere.
Right.
Because they don't want to sit. So they line in the toilet and then it's just like it's everywhere.
Then
their aim isn't always that good either.
Well, maybe we'll all learn to clean up after ourselves.
You have a history of sort of breaking ranks with established LGBT political organizations and being very successful in bringing, moving equality forward. How has civil rights groups like HRC or other, you know, that are trying to court transgender dollars for activism, responding to this landmark case?
Well, I don't know. I don't really follow what they're doing.
Send you a congratulations email or anything?
No,
a tweet or?
No. I mean, a lot of, at least in Oregon, a lot of the people who were running the show in terms of gay politics and how to move equality forward and what strategies to use. After the marriage equality case, after we won that in Oregon through a lawsuit, not through an initiative or a vote, which is the way the gay organizations wanted to go. And then I preempted it by just filing a $400 lawsuit and winning it. And
this is the marriage equality.
Yeah.
And
so after that happened,
before it became national
and we won marriage equality, a lot of the people who had been in the gay rights movement retired.
They quit.
I feel like that happened. It definitely happened in Oregon. A lot
this
of
is like after 2013. Marriage equality or what?
After marriage equality was won in the state of Oregon and nationwide, a lot of those people who had really invested, you know, their lives work in not just marriage equality, but that was the big ticket item. They went on to other things. So it's a whole new group of people who are running the show now in Oregon anyway. And I think probably in a lot of other places. I mean, those were very challenging times. A lot of people wanted to win that, and there was a lot of money to be made in garden parties and donations and asks.
How much money are we talking about
that
here?
Could support? Well, I mean, think about all of the gay organizations all over the country, both in every state and nationally, working towards marriage equality and using that as a means to raise money and then employ people to do not just marriage equality work, but other work for equality. once that happened, a lot of those dollars dried up.
Mm-hmm. Well, just look at Prop 8. When Prop 8 was passed and to repeal it or to fight, they spent $100 million or something on just our side. And that's not saying what they spent on their side for.
Right. And in the Oregon case, we brought a federal lawsuit. I looked to the Prop 8 as a guide and followed that. But the gay establishment there wanted to do a vote, and they were planning on spending $12 to $15 million just in the state of Oregon to essentially buy ad time and do press and advertising and Facebook ads and banners to say that people are cool enough to be treated equally mm-hmm. now, so vote out the
and so 12 constitutional to 15 million versus you spent $450.
$400. Shit. A lot of people lost a lot of contracts, and they weren't too happy.
But we got a guest on the show that saved so much money.
Yeah.
I mean, you're Mr. Frugal.
Well, and it's also
it's like a coupon for gay marriage. I mean, I just didn't want them to spend all that money. I could have given a shit about marriage. Frankly, personally, I didn't really care. I was sick of hearing about that narrative. I wanted to move on to trans issues and other issues of equality and racial justice, and I was tired of hearing about marriage. So, and a lot of other people were too, and frankly, I guess the courts were, because it's a done deal now.
Well, and that's the thing too, is from what I understand too, with the Edie Windsor case, and that's really how we got marriage equality in this country.
That's right.
It was very much that people were telling her, don't take this case to court. We want to win it through like legislation and do that kind of that way. And we've literally spent like hundreds and maybe $1 billion on marriage equality. I don't know, hundreds of millions on it. And I don't know what she spent, tens of thousands of dollars.
But perhaps. I mean, she didn't pay her lawyer. That woman who took that case on, she took it on pro bono. But, you know, with cases like that, when you win a case like that, there are attorney fees attached under the statute, and so the government pays your fees. So I actually got paid for that case.
Oh, wow.
The marriage equality case, because it was like vindicating. How a civil rights lawyer gets paid.
You should have billed them a little bit more.
Well, I did bill them more, and
So it was more than $400.
We're not going to pay you that much. Can you give us a break? We were so nice to you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You won, so.
So maybe the key lesson here is keeping equality from becoming a political football in the sense that if we can discreetly maybe go to court, like, I mean, the same way you did with Sergeant First Class Jamie Shoup, maybe we can overcome a lot of things. Maybe like a lot of civil rights groups might want to look at the approach that you're taking as a way of being very effective, but also very cost effective.
Well, it kind of depends on the issue. I mean, this question of marriage equality or not having it, all of the mini DOMA bills or the constitutional amendments that had been created under the Clinton administration and then copied in Hawaii. Like, it started in Hawaii because Hawaii was moving toward a court reversal of, or a court recognition of the right of gay people to marry, because there wasn't a specific articulation that said gay people can't marry in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And it was the threat of that possibility of the Equal Protection Clause being applied in Hawaii that led the Congress to create the Defense of Marriage Act.
Federal Congress, under President Bill Clinton.
Right. And then states followed suit and created what were called mini-DOMAs. So that's kind of part of democracy, is the states working these questions out culturally and figuring out how we're going to exist together as a culture. And then it kind of builds up and evidence builds up and people think about it and come to understand it. I mean, with this non-binary issue, a lot of people don't really understand it. The first person on a television show was last season on Billions. That's the first person that was introduced as non-binary. And that's pay cable.
Mm. I thought that's a limited number of people. The daughter or the child, the youngest child in Transparent, non-binary?
But
the character
wasn't I don't think it was identified as non-binary.
It's not like they were like, looked at the camera. I'm like, paging Mr. Hermes.
But my point there is that these are again, and that's a pay service. Yeah. That's if you're on Amazon Prime. And if Jeff Bezos has his way, everyone will be on Amazon Prime.
and non-binary.
But so the point being that in the popular culture, this is something that a lot of people don't understand. Mm-hmm. They're concerned what it's going to mean about bathrooms. They don't know how they have to respond. They don't like to have to use a plural pronoun with a singular subject. Like, if some people like a person. hard rather than using him or he and she, they want to use they. And that, so people complain anytime they have to learn something new.
You and I lived in Austin, Texas, and we say y'all all the time.
That's right, which is plural.
And that's plural for singular or plural. You know.
Were you worried about your judge at all that handed down the case? Or?
I wasn't. You know, I sort of the backstory on this, which I haven't really talked about before, is that I
regarding the marriage equality case.
No, I think we're
talking about the X case.
The non-binary case. So this was last year. To change your sex in Oregon, you use a statute, a law that has been on the books for I think over 30 years. Mm. Anybody can change their sex, and sex and gender are conflated in Oregon law. So if you want to go from male to female or female to male, there is a process that you have to go through. And you petition the court, you have to put it up on a cork board in the courthouse saying, I want to change my gender from male to female or female to male. And then if someone objects, then there's a hearing. But if no one objects, then generally, I mean, almost always the judge just signs it. So it's not an adversarial event.
Mm. And that's unique to Oregon.
Yeah, other states have it, though. Okay. I mean, I don't think they have it in North Carolina, but...
And, Jamie did have to go then to apply for a driver's license as a gender non-binary person, and Jamie was denied.
Well, so Jamie got the order from the court. Okay. That was what Mark was asking about, and I knew that I had discovered that the judge had a relative that was trans. Because I knew it was going to be the first time that anybody had ever been asked, any judge in my state had ever been asked to recognize someone as non-binary. So when I found out the judge had a relative that was trans, I signed up for a hearing that day immediately.
You're like,
and I told Jamie, I said, this is going to be an easy case. I think it's going to be just fine. And Jamie was certain we were going to have to go to the Ninth Circuit and it was going to be a Supreme Court case because we're going to bust the binary and make history. And to a certain degree, Jamie was right, but I was right on the law. I didn't really understand the pent-up demand and how big of a deal this was going to be for people. And Jamie didn't understand how easy it was going to be on the legal front.
Mm. So this was kind of something that was a very simple thing to do that could have been done sooner.
Cost $111.
That's amazing.
And so what kind of reaction have you gotten from people?
It's been most of my friends and family. I mean, it's a great... professional success to be able to help a single person help a culture evolve in terms of the way that the government relates to its citizens. But from what I understand, a lot of people who have never really felt understood being genderqueer or somewhere in the gender spectrum that's not male and not female, that's how they really feel themselves, and to try to explain that, to now have this conversation developing in the culture,
they're so excited.
What?
It legitimizes you as an individual.
Well, it does. And it creates,
even though you don't need it.
Well, you do. We do need it. We need to be recognized in the world.
What is this? It's like, ain't no man going to define me in the eyes of God. You know, it's like,
but we all want to be seen. Yeah. We all want to be seen and not considered other or alien or somehow unnatural or wrong or so different that we're not worthy of dignity. And when a government, in a year, the Department of Motor Vehicles had made this new rule, convened all these meetings, wrote up a new rule, put the rule before the Department of Transportation Commission, met with all of these other state agencies, and did it in time for Pride. I mean, that is incredible. If you're a person who has never been recognized before, who maybe your parents don't understand you, your friends don't really understand you, to think that the government of your state understands you, that you want to be included and acknowledge that they're willing to go through all of this work, which frankly is not that much work, but to do it with such swiftness and such dignity so that they can allow someone to drive, and like you said earlier, so that the DMV can be a place where someone can come to find legitimacy in the culture of who they are.
And without all the hate from all the hate mongers, right?
Yeah, and there's been none in Oregon. There really, we just really haven't. It's kind of a non-issue. I mean, Jamie Shoup earlier today was talking on the radio about how when Jamie moved to Oregon and was maybe wearing a dress or had breasts and walking down the street and didn't feel scared for the first time. And if you're not scared and you're not living in fear, you can start thinking progressively, not just defensively.
Sure.
And Jamie said, Well, I want legal recognition. Mm-hmm. I'm not living in fear. I'm not afraid to go out of my house like Jamie was in rural Maryland. Mm. Now Jamie has energy inside of Jamie's self to think prospectively and says to Jamie's self, I want legal recognition.
Jamie doesn't like using pronouns at all.
Prefers not to use pronouns. So I think that,
Elmo on Sesame Street, Elmo doesn't like to, use gender pronouns either.
I'm right? not familiar with Elmo, but
Elmo, the character,
Elmo always refers to himself as Elmo.
Elmo.
Oh yeah, that's the same. Jamie prefers that, but
yeah.
If one must use a pronoun just for ease of speaking, they, them, mm-hmm. there is preferred.
And you were telling us before we started taping that Jamie's motivation part of this also, too, is to make people realize is that we're not all born just a man or born a man or born a woman, because trans people hate that. But that we're just these two choices, whether it's male or female, and that kids need another option to know that, you don't have to decide.
Well, I think there are, Jamie and other people have recognized and questioned mm-hmm. the binary. So mm-hmm. we look at the binary and we see the way that affects us in terms of the way we deal with each other culturally. Jamie will talk about the medicalization that is also caught up in the binary. When Jamie felt, I'm not a man, Jamie thought, I must be a woman. There's only another option. And so Jamie went to see his psychologist and gender specialist. Mm-hmm. And Jamie was never presented with, well, maybe you're non-binary. There was, according to Jamie, kind of a push toward hormones. And do you want breast implants? And do you want facial feminization surgery and other aspects of intervention that move someone toward the more extreme side of the F spectrum. And so Jamie and others are just curious about how this might affect people if they don't feel pushed toward one end or the other of the gender spectrum.
And there's a lot of money to be made in thinking in this binary way with medicine and with gender.
Well, there might be a lot of money to be made now that we've got a new category to you.
Oh, really?
but there's a lot of money. Sure. I mean, there's a lot of money and power and study that has been advertising that is binary based. And so what we're doing is sort of busting that up and seeing what we can develop when it's not so extreme and not so polemical.
Sergeant First Class Jamie Shoup recently was profiled in Italian Vogue.
Vanity Fair.
Yeah, that was, I think.
And what magazine was? But that was in Italy or in the
Italian Vanity Fair, Italy.
Okay, and they had a photo spread showing Jamie's breasts.
Mm-hmm.
I guess on the internet they posted it with stars over it, but in the actual publication it's not censored at all. And
that's true.
I think that's great, but I'm curious to know,
free the nipple.
Yeah, for breast liberation.
Free the gender.
Remember, what is it, the breast liberation movement in the
early
90s?
Well, I'm sure when Jamie was a male, Jamie regularly went outside without their shirt on, and their nipples were freed then. So, but I don't know anything about Jamie's sensibilities around their nipples, but I do know that Jamie was in Vanity Fair.
Because what kind of person is Jamie? Tell us about the way Jamie approached you mm-hmm. to represent Jamie in this important case.
Sure. So it was last April or May. So April or May a year ago. So in 2016, my understanding is that Jamie reached out to several of the gay organizations in Oregon and nationally, and didn't get a lot of specific information or support, and then was referred to several other attorneys in town who didn't think that it was possible. And then Jamie called me and I said, oh, that's fine. We can do that. That sounds great. Come in. And I had, I mean, it was in my mind.
Sure, why not?
I'm like, you just ask. If you don't get it, then you appeal it, or you ask again, or you ask a different way. I mean, a lot of people don't want to lose, so they don't take on a mm-hmm. case, but it didn't take a lot of work. I mean, I didn't even brief the damn thing.
Were you concerned as a professional lawyer that losing this case might affect your reputation?
No, because no one knew I was doing it. I mean, I didn't make a big shebang out of it and tell everyone that I was going to do it. Although I did contact the Department of Motor Vehicles and said, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a case, an order here. I'd like you to start thinking about changing your rules now, because you're going to need to constitutionally.
You give them a firing shot, a firing warning.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't adversarial. I just said this is coming down the pike. And I figured with the a bisexual governor that we have in Oregon and this amazing attorney general is a woman.
That was the right climate.
That was the right climate, and that they would get the support they needed from the higher ups to say, yeah, do this, figure it out.
Kim Davis, that hate monger, you know,
from Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah. I'm sure her head's exploding hearing these news.
Is she a fan of your podcast?
Mm. No, but I'm saying, like, she's somebody.
She might be.
She secretly is listening to it.
Please donate now.
She was famous about, you know, denying same-sex couples marriage licenses.
Right.
And I can imagine that a lot of conservative clerks around the nation are already, like, preparing to become the next Kim Davis about this.
And not give someone a license if they look like...
Well, how'd that turn out for Kim Davis?
Yeah.
It made her some money for a while. You know, they made her cause celeb, and she got to tour, and she got to get a hug from Mike Huckabee. No. You know, she was like, oh,
what a reward.
Yeah, what a reward from Mike Huckabee. It's really extraordinary, the progress of this is happening. And so Sergeant Shoup approached you, and you guys just kind of like made it this.
I filled out the paperwork. I mean, it's a fairly standard form. I hereby petition the court to change from male to female or female to male. And instead I wrote in non-binary, from female to non-binary. And I submitted it to the court. We went to the court. And Jamie was there. There were a couple of people from the local university who had heard about it just to watch, a non-binary person and her legal advisor. And it was granted. Then the judge said, you're really pushing the envelope here, Lake. And I said, well, the envelope just needs to get a little bigger, Your Honor.
How long did you rehearse that line? That just sounds too perfect.
Sometimes it is perfect. I mean, this whole case has been pretty perfect.
And so why the X, and why not NB for non-binary?
Well, the X, in part because the X is a universal standard at this point. There are, let's see, the...
Because of algebra.
Well, there are eight other countries that recognize non-binary on a country level, including Nepal, Malta, Australia, Pakistan, India.
Wait, Australia has non-binary, but it doesn't have gay marriage. They did it all wrong.
I don't know. They're getting it together. New Zealand, Germany. And so those countries have X on the passport. Now, I think in anticipation of this reality, that there's a national, I don't have the, but it's like the national group of like Department of Motor Vehicle people. I have it here. Let's see. I know. Can you imagine?
Selma and Thelma.
Thelma times 100,000.
And there's the United Nations.
Their smoking lounge must be amazing.
Gosh, I can't remember what
it's
the
name
is.
It's okay. Don't
worry.
But
anyway, there
it.
Are
Patty
these large Selma. Organizations that are national that relate to transportation and licenses, and they have acknowledged that people are non-binary and that X is inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And also for aviation, certain kind of aviation. So you've got multiple countries, and you have two administrative bodies in the United States that recognize that as the symbol. Mm-hmm. So
why not
keep it consistent? I mean, there are people from those eight countries that come through TSA and travel to the United States with passports that have an X on them. Mm-hmm. Why add another one? And no one really objected to the X.
Okay.
Let's travel back in time to 1993. Lake Paraguay and I were in a relationship. You and I were lovers. We lived together for
my first
quite some
boyfriend.
Time. I was your first boyfriend. You were mine. And I have some photos here.
Faust's and I really loved you, Fausto.
This last one.
Right? Hi, Mark.
Hi,
so
Dave.
Alpha and Omega here. I have some photos of you.
Okay,
we're
going to post these online.
Yeah, of course. I want
you to look
at them.
I remember
that. So describe
what
you're looking at and tell us what you're seeing here.
Well, I can see the tower on the Austin,
the
UT
University
Austin
Texas.
Campus. And I'm wearing a very short sundress.
It's a purple dress.
Oh, and I have
Do you remember your drag name at that day?
I don't. Crater Lake? No, I wasn't Lake then.
It was a very...
Do you remember it?
I don't know. Yeah, but it's... these photos, I just dug them up coincidentally, but go to the next one there.
Oh my goodness.
So the story of this,
and there's Faustina. Who's that guy?
That's Chris Rincon. Oh, that's the head of the University of Texas Fine Arts Department.
Okay.
And so what happened was the University of Ghana in Africa.
Oh, God, this story.
And the University of Texas in Austin decided, I'm not sure why, but they did this. They had a cultural exchange program. Mm-hmm. And so they brought all these amazing drummers and dancers from Ghana. And the slogan was, "You're gonna love it."
Why not?
It was real corny, right? And so they had this week-long amazing performances with these dancers and drummers, you know, just banging the drums and dancing and, you know, really something very, for people in the South in the early 90s, very exotic. And so they were like, okay, now it's your turn, University of Texas, right? And so... You know, the music department did the little symphony and stuff. The theater department did some Shakespeare. And then the art department turned to the performance artists and said, "What are you going to do?" And we're like, "Let's." And they, so they turned to us and we're like, "Let's do the Hokey Pokey in drag."
It's just very Texas, the Hokey Pokey.
Yeah. Is it?
And drag's right very awesome.
Yeah, can you sing some of it for the international audience? Because not everybody
understands. You stick your right foot in, you stick your right foot out,
you stick your right foot in, and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. Hey!
Right?
And yeah. Then you do another body part.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then you put your left arm in, you put your left shoulder in,
you put your whole body in.
Put your whole body in, then you jump. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we did and that so, in that tight little dress.
So wow. It became a my first international incident.
But not the last.
This actually, you're gonna search the Associated Press. It's in the newspapers, it's in archives. They asked the King of Ghana what he thought about his cultural exchange program. He says, "We bring you our best. And what do you give us? A hokey pokey in drag."
I think that is actually true.
That's an actual quote.
Yeah, yes. I remember that.
Yeah, it's you can.
I didn't know if he was very appreciative or if that was a diss.
I think it was meant to be a diss, but I think they seemed to like it. They really loved it. You know, they were like, "This is exotic." The drag queens was exotic. It was something they hadn't seen before. We had water balloons.
Such joy. We had such joy.
There was a joyful aspect of it. And the fact that we had water balloons as breasts, and one of them grabbed them and it popped in their hand. Ooh. And it was just like, it was magic. It was like gender was this veil that they were very clear what it was. But for us young, you know, cisgendered gay boys in drag was something that was very malleable. And we managed to pop that bubble.
Now, is Lawrence v. Texas still a law of the land when you did that?
It was. It was.
That's right.
For those out there that don't know, Lawrence v. Texas
Well, Lawrence v. Texas is the famous Supreme Court case from 2008. That overturned the Texas sodomy law that made Fausto and I criminals when we were in our 20s. Mm.
That's right, honey. I broke the law.
Did you say every 2000? Night, sometimes twice.
Did you say 2008?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. It's not that long ago. It might have been 2003.
Did they get arrested in the 90s, though? I felt like that happened a long, long time ago.
Well, it was arrested. It takes a few years to get all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay.
And then I was supposed, you know, at that time, this was what you did for a lot of us in our community. You participate. You didn't go necessarily to audition for RuPaul's Drag Race. You participated in civil rights actions.
You mean drag?
In drag sometimes. And for us, like, dressing up in drag was something that was not a career move. It was a way to advance society forward. My roommate Chris Rincon and Enrique Rodriguez participated in a action where they unfurled a banner at the state capitol that said "Homophobia stinks."
And there was another banner too that we unfurled that said "You say don't fuck, we say fuck you." And we did that in the middle of a legislative session of Texas legislature in that enormous pink limestone building during a legislative session while hurling paper airplanes from the gallery above filled with permanent solution and fish emulsion to stink up the room. because what they were doing was changing the Texas criminal code so that it would be numbered more easily. But they were going to take out the criminalization of anal sex and oral sex, but only for straight people, and leave it in there for the gays. And that is the statute, the law, that we protested and were put in jail for, that I later decided to become a lawyer about. But that is the law that was overturned in Lawrence v. Texas.
That, tell me about your night in jail. You were like in a very uncomfortable room, and they fed you like bologna sandwiches.
Well, we were in a less uncomfortable room because at that time Austin had a gay cell. And that was a cell that was separate, and it didn't have bars on it. It was completely enclosed, and it had really high thread count sheets. That was a bad joke. No, it didn't. I mean, it was the same as the other. No, but it was completely segregated from the other prisoners, they're not necessarily criminals, arrestees. Mm-hmm. We don't even know if they're hoodlums because they haven't been convicted yet.
Okay.
But the people who were staying there for the evening, early Airbnb. But so we got to be in this room with a drunk guy who wasn't gay, but he goes there all the time because he's a drunk and he gets picked up. But he knows that if he goes to the gay cell, he won't get hassled and everyone's really nice in there.
Oh, so he was like pretending to be gay.
He was pretending to be gay. And, you know, incidentally, a friend of mine who works in AIDS research told me that people in Africa sometimes pretend to be gay to get access to PrEP. Anyway, that's a completely separate topic.
So that experience sort of made you think about like the law.
Well, I didn't know what my rights were as a defendant or as an arrestee. I didn't know what the constitutional amendments that guaranteed my freedoms were. And I didn't know just the process about how to get out of jail. And I didn't know any lawyers. And I was planning on going to meet you, Fausto, in Puerto Rico 3 days later. And this was not part of my plan. I realized
it was your vacation.
It was my vacation. And we were so naive and so young and hadn't thought this through. None of us thought we might be arrested for this. Like going into the state capitol, creating a ruckus, blowing aerosol foghorn cans and screaming at the top of our lungs. And we thought they'd just maybe ask us to leave.
Mm. Well, it was kind of glamorous in some ways. It's like, you know, our heroes were these New York City and Los Angeles performance artists.
Well, ACT UP was a big performance. I mean, ACT UP, there was a lot of performative aspect. There were die-ins. There were huge protests at the National Institutes of Health. And those were the people that I admired. And we did this with the Lesbian Avengers. You know, three gay guys did it with the Lesbian Avengers, who had also done sort of happenings, creative civil disobedience, not just standing in the middle of the street and screaming. But I remember that there was some anti-gay rhetoric on one of those church signs. So the Lesbian Avengers took a huge dump truck full of horse manure or cow manure and dumped it in the parking lot on Saturday night, so that when all the parishioners came the next day, it was full of shit, the entire parking lot. So they were great gals. But, you know, I realized I was naive. I didn't know what my rights were. I didn't know if I was going to get out of there. And I didn't know any lawyers, and so I decided at that point to go to law school.
And what happened with that particular case?
Well,
did you get charged? Did you have to go to court?
I didn't have to go to court. It was all dealt out of court, but the stipulation was that it would be dismissed in a year if I didn't get arrested on the Capitol grounds within that year.
Okay.
That was worth it.
People listening to this, you make it sound very easy. And in hindsight, like, you know, I knew you and I knew your life was very fragile and delicate and filled with peril. And, you know, if you could say, you know, you didn't know how you really worked hard to pay for your law school. It didn't come cheap. It was something that you went into a lot of debt for. It was something you didn't know if you were going to be able to even, you know, I remember like the anxiety that you had in studying for your LSATs and just unsure that you could handle this. This was something that was really foreign to you.
Right. And that's true. It does take work. I mean,
but now you're just like, I mean, I'm trying to bring back some of these feelings over you, but it's been almost 25 years since that you were in that
since position. I started law school. But it's true. I mean, I chose, I made choices so that I could work in the public interest to a certain degree. I didn't go to school on the East Coast because I was afraid I would be sucked into the New York money life and that it would be so expensive that I would have to sell out to some big firm and worry about billable hours. And I specifically chose to go to school on the West Coast so that I could potentially be an activist. And it's hard. I mean, if you go into debt hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I was over $100,000 in debt at the time I graduated, figuring out how to manage activist cases, pay the rent, maybe buy a house, and travel as much as possible, it's difficult. So you just don't make babies. And that really, really makes
don't
it a
adopt
lot,
any dogs.
A lot easier. But it is tough. And I think working, I mean, sometimes we get lucky. I mean, I do a lot of work too for businesses, and I do divorces and custody cases. I'm working on a BitTorrent case in the federal court right now.
What kind of case is that?
Tell us about the BitTorrent, because that's a big deal right now.
Okay, so BitTorrent is when you, I mean, there's something called Popcorn. There's other types of interfaces that look a lot like Netflix. And it is, when you're looking at it on your computer, it just looks like Netflix, and you can pick all these movies. But really what's going on behind the scenes is that you're broadcasting to the world your IP address and saying to the world or other people who are part of this network or this swarm, send me a little packet of information for Wonder Woman, for example, the new movie. And so all these people from around the world start sending you small packets of information, and then it's zipped up on your hard drive. And then you wake up the next morning and you can just watch the movie. It seems very simple and it's free. But every time you get one of those packets, and there can be thousands and thousands of them, you are saying, here's my IP address, and I live in Chicago in this neighborhood, and my internet service provider is whatever you have here, Comcast or whatever it is.
And so as you make your information, your personal information available on the internet,
you make it public. I mean,
somebody's going to try to make a buck off of it.
Well, sure. And so what's happening now is that there are that some movie studios and some lawyers are suing. They're getting from a company in Germany a list of IP addresses that are geolocated to a specific region. And then they're suing individual IP addresses, John Doe, subpoenaing the internet service provider and then getting a name, and then filing a lawsuit in the name of that person and drilling down to try to find out who may have downloaded these movies. And none of these cases has gone to trial, but it's so expensive to defend them that people settle for $5,000 and $10,000 for a single movie, even if they didn't do it, just because it's so confusing. The technology is so opaque to a lot of people, and the threat of a huge $100,000 judgment plus attorney fees, they just pay it out.
And what's really frightening, though, too, is like you say, when they subpoena these people, is they tell them, like, you have to hand over your hard drive, so your computer.
Right. Yeah. We talked about that earlier, Mark. I mean, the lawyers that are doing this will tell people, and they're right. I mean, once you have a lawsuit going, and if you're a lawyer, you have subpoena power, and you serve a subpoena on someone, and the presumption is that they have to comply. So I could, as a lawyer, I could file a lawsuit against your IP address here, whatever you use, find out that, hey, Mark Fillion is the subscriber. Then I could have a marshal or a private process server deliver you a subpoena and tell you to be at my office with your whole hard drive and every computer that you have in the house and any backup drives.
Couldn't I just hide my computers and buy a new one?
Well, you could, but then there could be consequences to that. Okay. And then it's up to you to hire counsel or file a motion to quash. And I don't know too many people that know how to file a motion to quash. And you call a lawyer to do that, they're going to want $5,000 up front.
If you erase the drive you present to them, then they'll take you to court for suppressing information.
Spoliation is what it's called. Yeah. And there's a presumption against you if you spoliate evidence. So my effort in the courts right now is to make it so that at least, is to try to make it so that this is not a good economic model for people to go after.
Because it seems like a shakedown, really.
It's a shakedown.
They're just sending out letters and see who responds.
Right. And so I'm trying to at least stop the court from allowing this, what are called copyright trolls, to even suggest to anyone that he can get a copy of their hard drive. If I could do that, the court will have done a good job in appointing me to this position.
They've done a lot of studies examining the, you know, Electronic Frontier Foundation is one of them. Please donate to them. They're very important. Yeah, they're charity. Great. How much does file sharing actually cost Hollywood? Not a whole lot. And actually, this whole thing is really being driven by the Motion Picture Association and other lawyers groups who make millions off of hustling people. And it really doesn't go into the pockets of filmmakers or studios at all. It's sort of a self, you know, reinforcing system.
Well, it's a moneymaker for someone. I mean, the lawyers make money, and also the company that sniffs out these IP addresses and geolocates them. They sell that information to lawyers.
Another thing that you have your sort of sights set on is copyright trolls.
Well, that's a copyright troll is the person that brings the lawsuits that I'm talking about. In
this
the
is the same idea. Okay.
Yeah, that would be so. The lawyer would be the copyright troll that handles the cases for big ones are The Cobbler, Dallas Buyers Club, The Mechanic. I mean, who watches these movies anyway?
I don't even know.
Well, Dallas Buyers Club was,
you know, that movie.
Popular. Ironically, Dallas Buyers Club was a movie about people taking sort of, you know, their healthcare in their own hands and bucking the system. Mm-hmm.
That is ironic.
Yeah. And so the whole idea that, you know, I think if Matthew McConaughey was told what's being done with his movie, he'd be pretty upset.
But he didn't write it. I mean,
he was certainly very important in having it made. Right. If he hadn't been involved in the movie.
Well, it is illegal, it wouldn't have happened. Arguably, to steal movies without paying for them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think Netflix is the right direction that this is going, and certainly iTunes.
Or
as
get
well.
A VPN.
Or. And that's what a lot of people are doing.
A virtual private network that masks your IP address.
But you got to pay for it, because if you get it for free, then it defeats the purpose. They're selling your information. And that ultimately is that. And that's why privacy is so important, because it's not just about protecting you from getting your identity stolen. It's also about protecting you from being harassed by all kinds of people,
including copyright trolls.
Yeah. So what would you say to this young drag queen in April 1st,
1993? So Fausto's looking at
April Fool's Day.
These pictures, April 1st, this picture of me in a sundress with the tower.
What do you say to young Shanita Drink?
Shanita Drink.
Is that your drag name?
No.
We'll just say it wasn't. I don't know. I think I would say it's all going to work out. Just keep working hard and have the faith. I mean, I've been a pretty happy-go-lucky guy, but beneath it all, there was a lot of anxiety that I wouldn't be able to pull it off, or I guess sometimes, you know, I suffered from that anxiety, just not sure if it was going to work out or if I would make it. And not that I've made it, but I mean, just life is rich. I have good friends. I'm happy. I'm healthy. And this week is really good because it's my birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy birthday.
All the celebrations. If I had known, I would have baked you a cake.
That's okay. I'll be back tomorrow.
You know, and, you know, a lot of times as nonconformists in terms of culture and our sexuality and our gender identity, we turn to our government and our society who doesn't fully embrace us and say, fuck you. I don't need your marriage license, your driver's license. Shove it up your ass.
Right.
But there was something like when Mark and I got legally married that I would say sort of changed our relationship.
Oh, yeah. There's no getting out of it now.
Until death do you part. But the other thing about it was that it became a symbol for what we had built together. I always tell people, it's like, in some ways, you know, being in a relationship with you, Mark, for how long have we been together?
Since 99.
But how many years is
that
now?
Like 18 years.
18 years. And we were been married for 3 now, right? So for 15 years, we had the ability to iron out our relationship and then get married. And a lot of young people today they start their relationships by getting married and then they figure things out.
Oh yeah. I think, I feel like too, is like before, like we had marriage equality, like a lot of young people, like when it was still on the cusp and you could still get it in a few states, people just rushed to get married right away. I feel like nowadays people are kind of like, now that it's legitimate, no, not to say those weren't legitimate, but it's the law of the land, is that people are waiting a little bit longer. But when you could only get married in that one or two states, people were just like, I have to get married. And then they get divorced a year later.
And I just want to say this to you, Lake, when you and I split up, it was one of the hardest things that I have ever had to do in my life. And it was very depressing and very emotionally hard for me, as, and I imagine it was hard for you too.
It was.
You know?
And it's why I never got another relationship. Because that pain is too intense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not why, but the pain of that, not just our split up, but... it's very hard. I have been in other relationships, and it's very, very difficult for
me. It's intense. And
it's harder than losing a lawsuit, I'll tell you that.
I would say that it also, you know, sometimes it's like at the moment you're going through a lot of these feelings of loss, but, you know, like not being us together allowed us to pursue other things in our lives and give back to the world in ways that maybe we wouldn't have been able to had we stayed together.
Yeah, no regrets. I mean, it's true.
And I'm not saying
you
this,
went to art school, and I was thrilled that you went to art school and I went to law school, and just to sort of to stay together just didn't make sense.
And I'm bringing this up not to bring out, you know, tears in your eyes on the show, but because I hear a lot of our listeners lament sometimes when they break up with somebody, and I say it's like, you know, like The Sound of Music, God's closing that door, but there's a window that's opening. There's other opportunities that are opening, and there's a really, like, your life is waiting for you. And so maybe when you lose that job, or, you know, something that you really wanted to work out doesn't work out, it's not the end. It's just the beginning of something new. And really, you know, you've done some really profound, extraordinary things that have benefited, touched so many people's lives for the better. You know, like, I know what that feels like to be able to get that marriage license. You know, here's another little fact. I'm not Fausto Fernos at all. Like, according to the government, my father made a profound mistake when he filed my Social Security card and my birth certificate. And for years, I have lots of legal paperwork saying that I'm Fausto Fernos, but this past year, I discovered through a series of events that I'm not legally Fausto Fernos. And the one government document that allowed me to correct my name universally everywhere was my marriage license.
Wow.
Because they were able to look that and said, so technically, I was not born Fausto Fernos. But now I am Fausto Fernos.
Because in Latin America, they put your mother's last name at the end. He always got licenses and stuff like that. But
then because I guess so many Brazilians and Portuguese people were using Puerto Rico as a way to get American citizenships or fraudulently get into the United States. They passed a law requiring a change in the way birth certificates are made in Puerto Rico.
I see.
And so I started discovering all this, like, you know, poorly done paperwork that was done by my sweet old dad, that basically I'm not really who I thought I was. It's kind of like Seymour Skinner in The Simpsons. You know? You're like, oh my God, I'm not who I think I was, you know? And now I am who I am. And it's because I had access to my marriage license. And so for a lot of these people who are now able to effective immediately go to their DMV.
Well, July 3rd.
On July 3rd. But by the time they hear this,
they'll... Okay.
And be able to be the person they are is an extraordinary gift that you and Sergeant Shoup have been able to give. You guys are American heroes.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be in a position to help.
You're like, for $150. You're like the Better Call Saul of
No, I'm not. My ethics are very different.
So how do people get a hold of you if they want you to win them a case in Oregon?
Sure. It's law-works.com.
And if they can follow up with Sergeant Jamie Shoup, they can go to, what was that?
Non-binary.org.
Yeah. The Amazon web TV series, Benefits of Husbandry, there's a character on that show called River Manning. You're the real life inspiration for that character.
That's right. Alicia J. Rose is an incredible artist, photographer, and director based in Portland. And she's sort of my swife, my straight wife, although she's not that straight. With the right woman came along. She's not that much of my wife, but we have a very close relationship. Yeah. And if I'm going to have pillow talk with anyone on the phone, it's going to be her. So she needed a new project, and we were on our gunny moon in Thailand together, and she posted something, The Benefits of Husbandry. And then she came back to Portland and made a 6-episode series that's now on Amazon Prime.
That is wonderful. I can't wait to catch it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the audience wants to see it, too. It's available on Amazon Prime, Benefits of Husbandry. Check out for River Manning. Thank you so much for coming on, Lake.
Well, thank you, Fausto, and thank you, Mark. It's been a delight. I really appreciate it.
I also want to remind the folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus and make a donation or a contribution, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen.
Lake, you say that Feast of Fun has the biggest what?
Well, the way I think of Feast of Fun, and I haven't always thought about Feast of Fun this way, because in the beginning it wasn't true, but I believe that it is the largest collection of queer interviews on the planet.
It's the largest LGBT interview archive, and you can access, you can unlock the mysteries of our LGBT universe, all there for your hours and hours of enjoyment, by becoming a Plus member. Go to feastoffun.com/plus, and you can access 13 years of in-depth, one-of-a-kind programming with the world's top drag queens, musicians, entertainers,
lawyers.
you're very rare for a lawyer. You were telling me that like lawyers today don't want to talk on the phone anymore.
No, they just want to send emails and bitch.
And you're a very different breed of a lawyer.
But I want to do some performance art.
You want to make the change the world.
Well, we have a wig right now. Do you want to do something? We'll do the hokey pokey and drag.
Let's start it. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Happy Pride.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.